Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it. No.
But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We're going to do something I never usually do on this podcast, which is essentially reveal all the secrets of the videos I've got coming up in the weeks ahead.
Well, I mean, it'll get people talking.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it will increase anticipation. Maybe people will just not watch the main channel videos and I would have just ruined my own content. I don't really care because we have just come back from a road trip.
A bit tired, are you?
Oh, I'm so tired. Yeah. I'm exhausted. I think fundamentally, when you do big road trips, you're driving fast and you're covering a lot of ground, it does take it out of you.
Yeah.
Sounds like a first world problem, but...
Because we average 200 miles a day.
I thought you were going to say we average 200 miles an hour. I was like, Tony, don't. You can't say this. We're recording.
No, I didn't get to 200 miles
an hour. I mean, my car wouldn't have got to 200. If my car hit 200 miles an hour, it's because things were falling off it and I had no brakes.
And actually... I know we're going to talk about it in a bit, but driving your car at 200 miles.
I mean, even I wouldn't want to do that.
And actually, it wouldn't actually be the driving, it'd be stopping the
yeah. What's that mean? As I say, the only way you would achieve that speed in my 360 is if everything broke and you were going downhill and you couldn't stop. It was just, you know, you were just momentum.
Or you drive it off a cliff.
Yeah, exactly. Flying through the air. Don't start. Do not start. But yeah, anyway, we have just come back from, was that your first European road trip of the year?
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely our first joint road trip of the year. I've done a few trips already in 2022. It was the start of my 360's 20th birthday celebrations, my first road trip with that car this year. As you say, we covered a lot of ground. At quite a good pace.
You more than me as well, because yeah. You was a couple of days before me.
I went a few days ahead of you. But it was an amazing trip. But we're recording this really sort of only 24, 36 hours since we got back. Yeah. And yeah, I'm pretty exhausted,
me
I'll
too.
Be honest.
Yeah.
Working at a hard
rate. People online think it's like we're having a jaunt and it's a holiday. And you're actually working, so you're filming. But anyone that drives something at a fair pace for a considerable amount of time, it does take it out of you.
I think any road trip, you know, of course, yes, we're concentrating because we were doing some spirited driving. On a work side, yeah, I was bashing out two videos a day, I think. It was a relatively short trip, but yeah, working our ass off and then doing some spirited driving. But, you know, even if you have to go and visit your parents-in-law 5-6 hours away, you get there, you're tired, you know, because it's concentration levels. And that's what we were doing. We were covering a lot of ground each day. We moved around a lot. We went from Luxembourg up to the Netherlands and back down again through Belgium and across to Germany to the Nürburgring and back through France. And we're gonna basically recap the entire trip here on the podcast today because, well, there was a lot of stuff that happened behind the scenes, which I want to discuss. There are some, as I say, some exciting videos coming your way. I'm pointing at you, the audience, which I kind of want to tease. And the big thing that happened, which we didn't film on purpose, was you drove my car, the Ferrari 360, for the first time.
Yeah.
And we agreed we wouldn't film it for a main channel video because we wanted to exclusively talk about it here on the podcast because we thought you guys would love to know how Tony got on. So stay tuned because we're going to be discussing that a little bit later on. But before we get into our epic road trip and everything that happened, I just want to bring up a tweet which somebody tagged me in this morning. And so we're not going to do a huge amount of car news chat today, but this really fascinated me. So it's all around Ferrari. Lol, duh. In 2021, Ferrari made an average of €97,000 in operating profits per car delivered. That's the highest in the industry. So for every car Ferrari delivered, they made around €97,000
profit. Yeah.
Tesla was the closest with €6,000 per unit.
Yeah.
So they came up with a chart of how many cars manufacturers need to make to equal the earnings generated by one Ferrari.
Yeah.
And this will blow your mind. I mean, it's just insane. So, as I say, Tesla has to sell 16 Teslas to make the same earnings that Ferrari do. BMW, 18 cars. Daimler Group, which I guess is largely Mercedes, 20. Tata, 22. Stellantis, 40. Toyota, 41. VW Group, 45. I mean, if we go down to Ford, Ford have to sell 758 cars to make the same earnings that Ferrari do with one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just more proof that Ferrari are just an incredible brand.
Well, yes, they are.
Or ripping people off.
No, they're not. Well, sometimes they are. But what you have to understand is that Ford, for instance, have different costs. Obviously, the more you make, the higher your costs go up, the lower your margins. So they'll be probably within them figures. I don't know because I haven't seen them, but there will be marketing costs and development costs and different costs that Ferraris would be less than Ford, essentially, because they make less cars.
Completely different products, completely different brands, apart from maybe if you looked at the Ford GT. I mean, as we've discussed on this podcast previously, the F-150, the biggest selling car in the world.
Yeah.
So they are going for the mass, for the amount of vehicles, while Ferrari are focusing on the profit per vehicle. It's completely different. But I just thought it was quite fascinating and an interesting insight and quite a cool tweet and stat that I sort of had realized, and I don't know how that compares to the likes of a Porsche or more realistically a Lamborghini or a McLaren, I guess. You know, they're probably losing money these days.
But yeah, anyway. Well, they will be, yeah. But as well, there's another huge difference as well, is that Ferrari, in general, rule of thumb, don't give money off their cars list because they don't need to because they're either pre-sold. Okay, there are some exceptions. At points, you'd get money off certain Romas or whatever. Probably not now because they can't make them quick enough. But you know, GT4 Lussos. But Ford will give all the front end money off. Again, maybe not now so much because of the demand. But in general, they're giving a lot of money away to feed the factory, essentially. So what happens is that they just keep churning cars, keep churn them, and it's all numbers. It's all turnover. So in general, banks are the same. They love businesses with turnover because what normally happens is if you've got a higher turnover, it should mean you make more money. Ferrari are proving that might not be the case, but they're selling a different, unique product.
Luxury good as well, luxury item. Yeah.
And if you narrowed it down, if you went for, say, a Porsche GT3 or an AMG Black Series would be a good example because it's 300 odd grand. I bet if you'd done profit per unit on that particular car, because they don't give any money off list, the profits would be similar, I would think. Okay, you've still got the manufacturing costs, and Mercedes as a beast to feed in terms of a manufacturer would be loads more in terms of cost than Ferrari anyway, because Ferrari only make 10,000 cars a year or however many they make. Mercedes probably make that in a week.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? No, yeah. As I say, it's probably more interesting as a comparison against a direct rival to Ferrari, as say Lamborghini, McLaren, Porsche in some senses. So, you know, maybe that's the slightly more interesting insight. But anyway, it caught my eye, the tweet, and I just thought it was a cool stat to show the difference between a brand like Ferrari or Ford or Tesla, whoever it might be. Anyway,
Who makes the most, well, we know pound for pound who makes the most money at the manufacturers. I think it is still Porsche in terms of profit.
Really?
I don't think as a manufacturer, but I think pound per unit, I think it is still Porsche that probably still makes the most money out of the manufacturers.
Biggest car manufacturers by revenue, you want by profit, don't you?
Yeah, revenue will be...
Oh no, still Toyota, mate. By a country mile. Porsche aren't even in the top four.
Really?
Yeah. So you've got Toyota net profit. This is 2020 profits.
But this is profit, here. Yeah?
Yeah, profit. Yeah. 19.1 billion.
Yeah.
Volkswagen Group is 15.5 billion, but obviously it's the whole group. It doesn't break it down.
Yeah.
Then General Motors 6.7, BMW 5.5, Honda 4.1. So yeah, there's not a breakdown.
Where are Mercedes?
The Mercedes...
I'm amazed they're not in there.
Daimler's all the way down in 10th, 2.6 billion.
Mm.
Because everything's a group now, mate. That's the thing. Like, everything's a group. Like,
yeah.
Volvo, which I'm guessing there should be listed as Geely, is 3.79 billion in profit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to know the breakdown.
Of the brands.
Yeah, because of the brands within
Volkswagen. Especially Volkswagen Group, because they are the biggest group in the world, aren't they? So,
yeah. Well, no, Toyota still. The group is in the amount of
Yes,
brands underneath.
Yes,
that.
Yeah.
We got really distracted there.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
It's an interesting
We should delve into that a bit more.
Yeah, it's a future episode, maybe.
We should do, and have a real breakdown.
Business.
Have a real business breakdown of that.
Get someone from CNN on.
No. What, Piers Morgan?
I don't know. No, not Piers Morgan.
Oh, no, he got
out. Oh, no, some money guy. some money guy who knows money. Anyway, yes, let's come on to it, because I say this whole episode is supposed to be devoted to taking you guys behind the scenes of our recent road trip. So, as Tony mentioned, I kind of got a bit of a head start. Left a few days before you did. My first stop off was actually headed towards Luxembourg. And as I say, this is the start of my 20th birthday celebrations with the 360s. That car, well, officially turns 20 in September. So it was first registered 25th of September 2002.
So that's a 52, Reg.
Okay, great. Thank you. I was trying to work that out in my head. me and number plates. I'm all over the place.
It's because they're normally private.
Exactly. So 52 plates. Anyway, so that'll be its actual birthday, which I'm starting to put some plans in place. But this is the year of its 20th birthday, and I've got big plans to it. So anyone who watched the first video from that trip, which went live on the main channel yesterday, we'll know that, you know, there's some big plans coming up as we head into the summer. But this was the first trip now that the paint had been done and the PPF was on and all the other bits and bobs. Still some stuff I need to do to that car, though.
I think it looks good, mate, to be fair.
I'm so happy with the way it looks. But as I mentioned in that first video, I think a restoration is just never finished.
Yeah.
You're just always going on. So even on the way back on the Utah, I noticed a little screw that holds one of my floor mats in place had come loose.
Yeah.
So I've got to do that now. So like, it's just always, like, it's nothing bad. Like, mechanically, that car is so rock solid. Huge thanks to the team at AV Engineering Aldous. Absolutely nailing the maintenance and running of that car.
Yeah.
Because it's rock solid in that department, which is really the most important part. Mm. But always the little aesthetics things are just constantly, well, it's just old, it's 20 years old, and things do sometimes just rattle loose. So ongoing in that department. But fantastic first day, blitzing through Belgium and bits of France into Luxembourg. And I went to visit a place called Deal and Drive. Now, they're an amazing dealership based basically in the center of Luxembourg. And they were explaining that, firstly, property costs there are insanely high, so you don't get many dealerships in Luxembourg. But also, as a country, they're quite discreet with their money. So even though they're specializing in specialist cars, they're probably a bracket above you, mate. I would say they're in the sort of 100 to 200K mark. Yeah. That's kind of where they're trading.
Sports cars.
Sports cars, yeah. So a bit of supercars, but mainly sort of, you know, Vantages, a lot of Porsches, F8s, a few McLarens here and there.
Well,
but
that's a supercar.
Well, yeah, so that's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. So it's a bit above a sports car. But genuinely, the people in Luxembourg don't like to show off their wealth. They're very discreet. Mm. So even though they are specialists in supercars and luxury sports cars, they're all sort of weirdly specced, you know, like greys and blacks and silvers, or like really, really highly specced GLE 53s. You know, like no one will get the 63. They get the mark below.
Yeah.
Really fascinating insight, I think. And actually, there must be so many parts of the world where markets very much, you know, are different. You know, what people want or desire is different for, you know, convertibles or hybrids or whatever it might be.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, super nice guys, had an amazing amount of stock and an amazing range of Porsches. And something which I guess we're going to come round to towards the end of this podcast is it was the start of reawakening something inside me, which I know is reawakened inside of you, of that inherent desire for another Porsche.
Yeah, I mean, I've had loads of Porsches and you've had a few Porsches, and I always yearn for a Porsche in general. I just
when you don't have one.
And more so when I don't have one.
As in it's not like you've got a Porsche and you desperately want more. Hey, that's a thing, and I'm sure it happens to lots of people, but my obsession with Porsche is always at its highest when I don't own one, which is a weird thing to say. And I, you know, you're right. I had 718 Cayman S, which you very kindly helped source for me and sell. Carrera T, obviously, for Drive the World, and the 996. And every time I wait about 6 months and I go, oh, I want another one. And like so badly. And I'd been doing all right, but then my visit to Deal and Drive, they had an amazingly specced GT4, which you're going to have to check out that video because it was just, I think, the best GT4 I've
ever
seen.
Where's the video coming out?
If you're listening to this on the day it's released, the video's coming out on Sunday. If you're listening to this at some point in the future, then just head over to the main channel. But yeah, an incredibly spec GT4. They had a lovely, actually probably my spec of a 992 GT3 Touring. And on that day, actually, I mean, my whole Luxembourg trip was plagued by GT3 Tourings, new 992. So I was just surrounded by nice Porsches, PTS Porsches. And I was just like, oh my God, there was a GT2 RS Manti Racing. There was a Turbo S exclusive series. I mean, just amazing Porsches. And I was like, oh, I think I need another one.
Yeah.
And you had the same problem later in the trip. So we'll talk about that when we get to it. Also had the chance to get behind the wheel of a McLaren 620R.
Yeah. Which I was very interested to know what your thoughts were.
Not a car that really was ever on my radar. Mm. I mean, we probably took the piss out of it when it launched. I don't really remember, but it was one of those cars you're just like, why? If you want a McLaren Sports Series race car, get the 570 GT4, which the 620R is based on. And if you want a fast McLaren Sports Series road car, get the 600LT, which is there. 620R is sort of this weird space in between where you can't actually go racing in it, and it's probably a little bit too intense for the road. Mm. But actually, it wasn't.
Yeah, I've actually heard some really positive reviews and stories about that car, of how good it actually is.
When was the last time you were in a Sports Series McLaren?
Was a 600LT, probably a year ago.
Yeah, I actually couldn't quite remember.
Maybe longer.
The last time I was in a Sports Series McLaren. I mean, I did 600LT launch, never made a video of it, but I went down to the Hungaroring and had a go in that, it was amazing.
It's a good car, that 600LT, you know.
It's a very good car. Yeah. As is the Sports Series.
Yeah.
They obviously just pooed themselves in value, had plagued issues. I had sort of PTSD driving it because every time I went for the starter button, I was like waiting for it to say, bing, key not found. Yeah, and I was like sort of shaking as I went to turn it on.
It was all right.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I didn't. Well, you'll see in that video.
When's that one going out?
I don't know. Stop asking questions. It's coming soon. But it worked during the short test drive. I never like to sort of completely go like, oh, McLaren's issues are fixed. It was amazing because it wasn't exactly.
No.
But yeah, it was a really fun experience. And a bit like with the 765 LT that I drove, because of its rawness, it gave the car spice. It gave the car a bit of oomph, which is what I often say that McLarens are lacking. Is you know, and even heck, some of the new Ferraris are lacking. It's that low speed character and sense of occasion. And this thing is so sort of stripped out and raw and ridiculous. Yeah. You can't help but be like, whoa.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because it's a McLaren, they've got that amazing suspension. So it wasn't shaking me out of my bones. It was a cool thing and looked incredible. And we took it right through the center of Luxembourg. So the shots were amazing.
Were they? Yeah. Was it a Larry color? Was it?
Yeah, blue with orange bits, and all the decals. And so, yeah, some amazing visuals in that. And I'd say huge thanks to Deal and Drive for letting me have a go. Because, well, the weather did get good. But when I arrived in the morning, it was a little bit cloudy and spitty. And I was like, do we really want to go out in this car? But by the time we were driving away, the sun had come out, which was good. Because it's got that special Trofeo R tire that's like super shaved.
Yeah.
So that was my first sort of few days in Luxembourg, and then headed up to the Netherlands, which is where I was going to find you. Now, in the lead up to this trip, and as you might have heard if you've listened to some recent episodes, Tony was being very vague with what car he was going to bring on the trip. Obviously, I was always going to be in the 360, and I think you just thought, why were you sort of undecided? Because you thought the 360 was going to be too slow, or you wanted to bring something of equivalent?
I just didn't know what to bring, mate. As in, even when I sat here last week and we done the podcast, I didn't know. Oh, no, I did by then.
You were teasing it.
Yeah, only because I knew that what I was going to bring, I'd bought. Do you know what I mean? Otherwise,
so you bought something, something came into stock and you thought, that would be perfect, I'll take that.
That's literally
But up until
it,
that
mate.
Moment, you had no idea.
No, I had no idea.
Because neither of us have really explored roads around the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg. Okay, we were eventually headed to the Nürburgring where we've both been plenty of times. But the rest of the time, we didn't really know what was in store.
No.
And so that's what I was saying to you. I was like, look, I don't think it's going to be particularly mountainous or hilly, or I don't know what the roads are going to be like. When you did the teaser last week and said Mercedes, I thought that you were bringing an A45S.
Yeah. Well, I considered it because I got two in stock. But I thought, no, it needs to be. And to be honest, had the car that I brought had not come into stock, I'd have just gone and bought a Porsche.
I was going to say, what else were you considering? What else did you nearly bring?
It would have been a GT4. A GTS 992 or something. You know, I just would have gone and got a Porsche, because I could have got a Porsche, done the miles and still come out of it, and I wouldn't.
Did you come close? Was that like, did you actually find a car that you were contemplating?
I found a couple. A couple on standby, but it's just lucky that the car that I got come into stock, literally just, and I thought, that's perfect. I've had a couple of them before and it's perfect. It'll do the job.
Lucky for me too, because if you had turned up in a Porsche after my experience in Luxembourg and after this reawakening,
I wish I
would have just gone, oh my God, Magnitude Finance, are you there? Are you ready? So tell everyone, I think most people might have seen it on Instagram, but what did you actually end up bringing?
AMG GTR.
One of, I would say, your favorite cars.
Well, it was for a purpose.
Interesting.
But I don't know how to explain it. Like, I think I'm done with that car now. Like,
okay,
I've done a lot of miles in them and a Pro. And when you compare, it's a very, very good road car, mate. It is a very good road car. But when you show it a hairpin or, you know, a twisty road, it does start to become a bit heavy, a bit cumbersome. The steering's not quite as direct as, say, even your car.
First compliment, please. Please write down that first compliment, everyone.
Put the minute in as well.
Exactly.
Because we love that.
Ben, can you actually make a big deal about that, please? Thank you.
Or Ferraris in general.
don't backtrack.
Porsches as well, obviously. And there was times throughout the trips when we was on certain roads that, because it's bat fast, that car, especially for the road, it is really fast. But there was a few times where I thought, oh, I wish I was in a Porsche here. I wish I was in a Porsche here. I wish I was in a Ferrari here.
Do you think that's because of the experiences you've had? Because since you last had the GTR, well, the Pro you had for half a day, but the last time you had the GTR, since then you've worked your way through a lot of mid-engine cars, stock cars, personal cars, whatever it might be, you know, light focused stuff,
which is what I like,
which is what you like. Yeah. As you said, do you think you've not only sort of done everything that you could or would want to do in a GTR, but you personally have just moved on from a front engine rear wheel drive?
Well,
layout?
When I mean, you was with me when I bought my first one, they'd just come out, mate.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was sort of the car to have. So, And I loved it. All right, I'd done the brakes on it and, you know, it broke a little bit. But it was a good car and I did enjoy owning it. And we took it to Ireland when I had my GT3 RS. I didn't like it as much as the GT3 RS, but for a certain purpose, it was better than a Porsche GT car, you know? Like, because it, as a GT, it's better than a GT3 because it's turbocharged. You can shut it up. Yeah, it hasn't got to be revving all the while and... On a European road, not in this country, but on a European road, because it is a little bit bumpy, that car, but on a European road, it's lovely and smooth.
Most European roads. Just for those international listeners or those that are lucky enough to live in Luxembourg or France or so.
Yeah.
Most European roads are smoother and better serviced than English roads. English roads tend to be incredibly bumpy.
Yeah, for sure.
Important to say.
Yeah. So... Yeah, so I just think, and then I had the Pro for a while, and I just think I'd sort of done what I wanted to do in that car, and the car that I own now is obviously a level of, my personal car is obviously a level above a GTR, and I found myself at points comparing it to that car in terms of brakes and turning, which is stupid. Yeah, I know, but you can't help it, that because that was the last car I got out of, kind of thing, you know.
Sure. No, I mean, I think the GTR is still a great car if you consider it against an F-Type R or a 992 GTS or something like that.
For the money, mate.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
I think it is still a great car. I think you're right. You know, I've never particularly been enamored by it. Like, it doesn't do a lot for me. I know you've spent a lot of time with them and driven them. And I know on this trip, you were kind of like, I sort of feel like I've been there, done that.
For sure.
It's not really working. Yeah. I think it still is cool. And we have to mention the car you bought had an incredible wrap. I think a lot of people thought it was an exclusive paint. It is a Mercedes color. It's based on a Mercedes color, right? China blue.
Yeah.
China blue is the inspiration for this wrap, and it did look amazing, and it made the car really stand out. And I think it has incredible presence. And you're right; it's a very comfortable place to be. I don't like sitting in them because I think they feel huge. You're really sitting back on the real wheels. You've got this massive bonnet in front of you. The car feels very wide because of the cabin design and layout.
I think you quickly get used to that. You are right. And when I picked it up last week, That did come into my mind for literally 5 or 10 minutes, mate.
And then,
at no point in our trip did I think, flipping hell, this is big. It's just
lie.
No.
But you said that to me on the walkie-talkies. No. It is big, this car.
Yeah, but what I mean is I didn't feel like intimidated by it. Do you know what I mean?
It's because you've got big cojones.
No, it's just because I'm just comfortable in it, you know.
Yeah, sure. You know what you're doing.
I don't know about that. I mean, there was a couple of moments.
we'll come back to those. Definitely a Larry looking car and incredible road presence. And so we met up just outside of we're just south of Amsterdam near a city called Utrecht. I don't know if
in a petrol station.
In a petrol station. And I genuinely pulled in and I was sort of minding my own business, looking, trying to work out where I was going to park, and I looked at my mirrors. I was like, oh, there's a blue MG GTR. And then I couldn't see in, so I was like, is it him? I don't want to wave awkwardly if it's like some random Dutch person. But anyway, it was you. And we went off to do a little bit more filming, which I want to talk about in a second, but I want to talk about what happened just after that, because...
After the filming?
Yeah, that evening...
Oh my God.
We headed to our hotel, which was right in the center of Utrecht. And before we left, I said to you, what's it like getting to the hotel? He said, well, there's quite a lot of cyclists around here, aren't there? And I said, well, yeah, of course, it's famous, the Netherlands, for having thousands of cyclists, bicyclists, you know, especially in Amsterdam and all these cities are very pro cyclists. And I'd already experienced a little bit of the sort of, you know, mentality that is cyclists rule the road. I wasn't prepared for how intense that would get upon arrival into Utrecht.
Aggressiveness, I'd call it.
Yeah, the kamikazes. So, yeah. As we're rolling into this town, into this city, we're in convoy and we're just pootling along very slowly. And as we're starting to approach some of the junctions, we're just getting, I mean, cyclists are just like flying everywhere, like coming left and right and cutting you up.
And motorbikes, mate, with blokes with no helmets on.
Flying everywhere. And if you're turning right, you know, at a crossroads or cross junctions, you know, cyclists, they just don't stop. They're just flying everywhere, green lights, red lights. So fundamentally, cyclists have right of way and you've got to be super aware. So because Tony had warned me of this and just because of the situation, and it's all a bit nervy and intense, I got the giggles. Like I couldn't stop laughing about how ridiculous the situation was of us two in supercars cruising through a city that wasn't designed for supercars at all. When my harness is in, I have no visibility. I can't see to the right, to the left. Like, I don't know what's going on. The exhaust. And I'm looking back at Tony and he's just looking sort of flapping. And so I get the giggles. And I'm trying to get to our hotel and it says, right, take a right here, take a right. And I'm just driving and I'm minding my own business. And it starts setting us down some very narrow routes, you know, some almost pedestrian looking routes. Mm. But then I see the signs for the hotel. So I'm like, okay, we're going the right way and we're driving along. And then I see the hotel and there looks like a sort of a gate entrance. So as I get closer, I'm sort of like, wow, that's tight. So yeah. I half try to pull in. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to need to like do an Austin Powers 35 point turn here. So I kind of put the window down and I look back at Tony and I'm sort of giving him a thumbs up, like, because he said he'd already been to the hotel.
I did, yeah.
He said, I've dumped my bags already. So I was like, is this it? Is this the entrance? And Tony's like, yeah, thumbs up, mate.
But
yeah,
I thought you were saying to me, I thought when you were thumbs up going like that or whatever you was going, I thought you were saying to me, can you get in here? Okay. Can you, because I'm going to struggle. Can you get in? Okay. And I'm going, yeah, I'll be fine. Don't worry. But that's what I thought you were saying.
So, miscommunication.
As you were driving round, by the way, yeah. I'm thinking, why is he going this way? This ain't the way in.
Why didn't you call me and say, what are you doing?
Well, we didn't have the walkie-talkies at that point.
I have a mobile phone. You just call me.
Yeah, but I don't have Apple CarPlay in that car.
Oh, well, that's your fault, not mine. My 20-year-old 360's got a good Bluetooth setup, so...
It's got Bluetooth, no Apple CarPlay.
So we're driving along, and on this little narrow route, there's a lot of cafes, like many European cities, lots of people sitting outside enjoying a beer and things like that. So I'm lining up to have another go at this way too tight gateway. And this woman starts coming up to my car and yelling it in Dutch... And I couldn't really work it out because my car's like, so I just see this woman like, oh, no. And I was like, what? I'm sorry. What? I only speak English. I'm sorry. And she goes, turn off your car. And I'm like, what? She goes, you're gassing everybody. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I'm so sorry. And I look back and there's obviously like these sort of people all sitting at this cafe and my exhausts are pointed directly at them as I'm like, like trying to maneuver. So I switch off the engine. I'm so sorry. And she was irate. Like she was, veins were popping out of her neck. This is, you can't bring your cars here. This is for sight. You're killing us. Like a bit like a Greta Thunberg. Like, how dare you? How dare you?
And so
at this point, because I already had giggles, I started giggling more because of the ridiculousness. And I look back at Tony, and Tony's got a man.
Two men
leaning in the wind, looking like they're about to knock out Tony.
They were fuming.
Like so angry. So at this point, I'm like crying with laughter about the situation. Not that I had potentially gassed some people. That was awful. And I was very apologetic. I don't think she probably didn't think I was sincere.
No.
Because I was like, I'm so sorry. But I was looking at you as you had these Dutch people yelling.
He was fuming.
What did he say to you though?
Mate, honestly, like they were just full on going, would you like me to kick your car? They were like full on. I said, if you kick my car, I'm going to get out and kick you. Like I genuinely said that. Like, how dare you? I don't care you don't like cars. You can't go around saying you're going to kick my car.
Okay, look, I don't want to sound, we're not trying to sound disrespectful here. Obviously, I totally get it. They're sitting there having a nice beer. We were clearly in the wrong place. But can I just say, it wasn't a non-car zone. We weren't in a pedestrian zone. So it is possible to drive down there, fine. But yes, our cars are loud and shouty and they're supercar-esque and we were sort of right in front of them and I was sort of maneuvering. So I get it. I totally get it. Their aggressiveness is what was sort of slightly uncalled for. It would have been totally fine if she just come and knocked on the window and said, look, do you mind turning the engine off? We're sitting right here. I don't think this is the entrance to your hotel. you know, you should go.
Correct. But
they were so aggressive, and as I say, we just got hysteria. So we quickly realised that, yeah, our cars weren't that welcome in the hotel. So somebody came out and said, turn left, turn left. So then we had to drive all through these little streets. We had cyclists, like, you know, everyone's flying. So we finally made it to our hotel. We weren't sure whether we'd come out and our cars would be sort of set alight during the night in some kind of witch campaign. But fundamentally, what we're trying to say is, in a city,
don't go to Netherlands.
Yes, I don't think driving is particularly welcome, or cars, combustion engine cars, are particularly welcome in the cities of the Netherlands. And is this true? Because we know we have loads of Dutch listeners. Is this a fact? Were we in the wrong? Were we stupid? Were we naive to take our cars into the centre of a city? Is it just kind of common acceptance that you only go in with a hybrid or an EV or a little?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Say something, mate. I should have saw it coming, really, because I got to the hotel before you as I was driving through, and even when I was driving with you on the way to the hotel again, people were looking at me, us, like we just shot their mum. Like, mate, they were genuinely annoyed.
But this is a sign of the future. This is a sign of the future. I think the Netherlands are ahead of us. Because I do believe in the city, we should only be in electric vehicles, bicycles, public transport. It doesn't make sense for someone like me in an RS6 churning around. Okay, fine. I'm not emitting huge amounts of carbon. I am emitting carbon, but not like a car from, I mean, my Ferrari would be far worse in the city.
Yeah.
But still, in comparison to the emissions of an electric vehicle or a very clever hybrid vehicle, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I get that, but we are not there yet. So it seemed surprising and shocking. And because we're visitors, we didn't have that information that they are there in their mindset. And so I do think this is where we're going. And I think if you look at, take Fur, for example, right? That period of time, what, late 90s, early noughties, when the world woke up to the fact that actually wearing real mink, you know, exotic fur,
yeah,
wasn't a thing to do. Mm-mm. People were pouring paint over celebrities in their fur jackets and things like that. So we all moved to a far more sustainable, or what would be the right word there? Anyway, you know what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we moved to a different thing with fake leathers and fake furs.
Yeah, yeah. Artificial.
Thank you. And so that's where I think we are headed. You know, the generation, the young generation now, are super anti-emissions, environmentally harmful, anything.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be driving around these cities in the future, and people are going to spit at you if you're not in a little baby, tiny Fiat 500e.
Mm. When to make the Fiat 500e emits more gas than your RS6.
We know that. And I think prime example.
So they're not saving the country at all, are they?
Prime example is that new Hummer Electric, which I think is more carbon emitting than like a Urus.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just to produce, like, the whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it was a sort of stupid and hilarious moment, and one that I would have loved to have caught on camera, but it was also quite stressful and we didn't capture it. And I don't want that to sour our Netherlands experience, because before that happened, I introduced you, I forced you into a classic.
You did force me in.
So this was one of my favourite moments of the trip. I thought, okay, here comes Tony. He thinks, oh, my first supercar trip of the year. Yeah, gotta go with Gal, go have some driving. I bought an AMG GTR. I had arranged, with huge thanks to Cool Classic Club, just outside Amsterdam, to go and not only sort of have a tour of their incredible space and look at some of their amazing cars, but get you behind the wheel of a modern classic, let's call it. Because you sit here week in, week out, slating them. If a car made before 2018, it's crap. All classic cars are crap. It's all you say.
Right.
And you slate some of the greatest cars ever made.
Right.
And I was like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's clueless. So you can tease, ladies and gentlemen, the car that I managed to get you behind the wheel of.
Do you want me to tease it or tell him?
You can tell him.
It was a nine. Oh, wait a minute. Was it a nine? God.
For those who aren't watching. Four? Yeah, for those who aren't watching, I'm hitting my head against the microphone.
It was a Porsche 964 RS.
Carrera RS.
Carrera RS.
1992 Carrera RS.
Which is a modern classic.
An icon. I mean, an absolute icon. And obviously, we had Max Chilton on the podcast recently. He bought his 2.7 RS, didn't he?
Yeah.
And you were like, I'd rather walk home than drive that. And I was like,
oh, No. What I actually said was that I'd rather have your car and have the extra money than have that. Because I couldn't, I just didn't
think. Don't remember you saying that at the time, but no, I that's what you think.
I said I'd rather walk as well.
Yes.
But then I said, if I had to have one, I wouldn't have one. I'd buy your car. If I had to have a modern classic car, I'd just buy your car and have the money.
Second compliment, Ben, if you can just once again highlight and everyone write that down. That's two in about 30 minutes. There's going to be a lot more coming. So I thought, okay, fine. That's a bit too old for you. So let's put you in basically the next RS that came along, the 964. And, you know, this car was immaculate. It had been prepared for a show. So
it was a nice car.
We couldn't go for a huge drive, but it was an amazing afternoon because it just gave me a chance to ram classics down your throat. And hey, look, considering what happened in the days ahead, I actually think it was the beginning of chipping away at that little ice block heart of yours and showcasing you that, you know, actually older cars do have a little bit of feeling, a little bit of connection.
I already knew all this, mate.
Well, sometimes you don't say as much. Sometimes
well,
you say they're crap.
Say as much, but I mean, they are crap.
No, they're not crap.
Well, I think they are. But anyway,
can't believe
we'll get
you're
into
still
that.
Tooting this horn. So amazingly fun experience and huge thanks. Cool Classic Club, I say, doing something a little bit different in the Netherlands. Amazing rave cars, young guys, incredible different sort of classics and modern classics. And I was in my happy place.
Yeah.
You were walking around looking a little bit bored saying, when are we off to the hotel?
Can we have a coffee?
Little did you know what it would be like when we went to the hotel.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then it was finally time after a few more bits and bobs to leave the Netherlands and start what we would necessarily say is our sort of driving element, right?
Mm.
So our route was south, sort of via Eindhoven into Belgium and then across back through Luxembourg. And we'd literally done the sort of old school technique of jumping on Google Maps and looking for some nice white twisty roads. I'd had a few DMs from you guys, a few emails, some suggestions of places to visit. But we didn't really know what was ahead of us. We were just going to kind of make it up, right?
We was, yeah. And Netherlands was
flat. Yeah, I'd done a bit of driving in the Netherlands for some other videos that will be coming soon. And I was just like, I don't think we should hang around here. I'm sure there are some good roads in the Netherlands. I'm certain of it. But I don't think they were going to be local or easy to find. And we had to get south. So I thought, let's just crack on and get to Belgium. And I think we'll do better in and around the Spa region. Everyone says it's very good. And that was the kind of first place we headed.
I think so.
Beautiful, but very bumpy.
Bumpier, sure. Yeah.
I don't remember, there was one of those roads we were rattling. Like
yeah, you're right, actually. There was a road that... Was that in Belgium?
That was in Belgium, that we did
bounce all the way down.
But then we crossed the border back into Luxembourg and immediately I declared, thank God for money.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Because the wealth of Luxembourg meant the road smoothed out. And we stumbled across the road that I was actually most excited for the day, but an absolutely amazing road. I should bring it up I'm going to bring up the name because I need to shout this road out because it felt almost like we were in Japan.
Well, there was a few, weren't there? But there was a couple of real particular ones.
There was that one, mate, that yeah. we both went,
wow. And it's, I think at that point, I wished I was in another car. It was when we got to the really nice road.
That you thought, hold on a second, I'd like to be in something else.
What if I bring this car
for? I think it was the 331. Let's see where my photos are. That's the one that I'm going for, the 331 in Luxembourg.
Right.
And it was quiet. We had a good run.
We had a good run.
And it was just perfectly sort of pitched, wasn't it? Twisty, pretty, some straights.
We had a coffee.
We had a coffee halfway through, which always helps.
Yeah.
But it was also, here we go, I'm going to just double check. Kirchbad Kaltenbucken. I'm not going to be able to pronounce it. It's right by Kaltenbach. Kaltenbach? It's the 331. I nailed it. 331. Okay, perfect, yeah. Done.
And you always tend to know, like, if you're on a road trip and you see cyclists, professional cyclists or motorbikes going up and down a road, that normally half tells you it's a decent road.
You're right. It's a good sign, isn't it?
It's a good sign, yeah.
Does mean you've got to do some interesting avoiding every now and again. But
yeah, especially the motorbikes.
But as we launched off down this road, having a very good time, I think it was the first time that both of us realised that both of our cars were maybe not the best equipped in the braking department.
No.
So my 360 does have the special pads on it, which I think give better feel than what they were. But by about five turns of... And this was heavy braking. Let's just say we were both on the anchors.
Yeah, we're pedalling on, yeah.
My pedal started to go very soft.
Mine was okay, but my car is just heavy.
Yeah.
It's just a heavy car. So the more you pound the front brakes, you start to lose the pedal a bit. But at no point did I think I'm losing my brakes. They were fine.
Sure. I thought my brakes were going to go on fire and yeah. I was going to go straight on through the barrier. Yeah. There were some moments, weren't there? Yeah, for both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, I think... We slowed down after that, but we had a
well,
very...
Well, you did.
Well, no, I think you did too, if
did I
remember.
Did I? Yeah. That's unlike me.
I think we both had a very good time. And so we pulled over, had a coffee, and this, the big moment, is when we said, should we swap cars for a bit?
Yeah, that's what we said, didn't it?
So did you do this because you were genuinely interested in what my car would be like, or because you thought it'd be good content? Or like, where did this kind of motivation come from?
I wanted to drive it.
Just wanted to see what the fuss is about.
I just wanted you bang on about it for 4 years, how good you are now, I'm in love with it. And actually, to be fair to you, I really appreciate you letting me drive it because it's your pride and joy.
It really is.
You don't let many people drive your cars.
I was trying to think
cars.
Who else has ever driven it, actually.
Well, I know there's not many people, so I thank you for letting me drive it. It was an eye-opener, especially when I went to hit the brakes. But, so first of all, we said, let's swap over. Let's swap over cars. We had a coffee. Let's swap over cars. Okay, no problem. Flipping hell, what have I said? Why have I said yes?
Well, hold a sec. So what were your expectations?
Well,
because also, can I just jump in here? Because we've spoken about this quite a lot since that drive and recording right now. Please do not become Tony from Gravelwood. And ham things up. I think I'm going to crack everyone up here. I'm going to say what they want me to say.
I'm going to be outspoken.
I'm going to tell
the truth, mate.
Yes, for the first time ever on this show.
No, I always tell the truth.
I think the audience have proven that's not the case.
Well, that's a lie because I always try to tell the truth.
And you're always right. So
correct.
So, yeah, what were your expectations?
Well, I have actually had a 360. It was an F1 car. It was a
Spider.
It was a very, very long time ago. And I had a 430 as well. And obviously, it was such a long time ago. I couldn't remember how it drove. You know, gets in this car. Looking around for the seatbelt. There's no seatbelt. He said, oh, mate, you could do the harnesses. I said, what?
But have you not noticed that? By this point, we've been on the road for 2.5 days. You've seen that car plenty of times.
Yeah, but
I'm only ever wearing harnesses.
No, but I just assumed you might have had a lap belt as well. I just assumed that.
I kind of wish I did, but no.
Yeah. Well, so did I. So I get in this car, I've moved the seat, I've then got to do the harnesses. He says, you might have to tighten them up as you go because they come loose. So I spent 3 minutes trying to tighten them up. It would have been 5 minutes if you hadn't have helped me. Anyway, gets in, goes to start it. Oh, no, mate. You've got to press the immobiliser button.
I mean, you're saying it like that's a huge thing. No. That's such a common thing.
No, I'm thinking, why has he got an immobiliser? Who's going to want to steal this? So anyway, piston mode starts up. And then it starts up, it cranks up, and I thought, nice. Ferrari. I'm in a Ferrari. We pulls away, and from what I remember, I thought, not your car, but I always thought old Ferraris had an awkward, not so good clutch. And I pulls away, and I thought, well, it's not so bad. Well, it's fine. Anyway, we gets going. And bearing in mind, by the way, I had your car, to be fair to you, and I'm not just saying this, you're my friend, you have got one of, if not the best 360 around, right? So I'm driving and in the best example. I personally haven't seen a better 360 than what you've got. So I am driving the best example. So pulls away. We drive up the road. I come out the turning. I pull out. I put my foot down. Nothing happens. No, wait. Let me speak. And then this big bark, this Ferrari bark, and I start driving down the road and I start smiling. And I'm thinking, I'm in a Ferrari. So first and foremost, no matter what I think about the car, good or bad, I'm in a Ferrari. So I instantly start smiling. It's still a Ferrari, right? So we get going. We drive down the road. We started to push on a bit. We were a bit steady first 5 minutes, as in, then we started to get going. And I'm up and down the gears, and I'm starting to come round, and I'm thinking, well, I get it. I completely understand why he loves this car. It's a Ferrari. It still drives like a Ferrari. It still turns like a Ferrari. It's still got them characteristics. And then we push on a little bit more. We start to go a little bit faster. And then we goes into what I can only describe as quite a fast corner. You was a little bit up ahead. And we were moving, yeah. And I goes into this corner fairly briskly. And it went straight. And I said to you, mate, why does it do? Why does it go straight? He said, oh, well, it's characteristics for 360. It's just what they do. And I'm thinking, flipping hell. I mean, you could have told me. This is your pride and joy. Anyway, I wasn't going fast enough where I went straight into a field. I did manage to sort it out. So we then get going a little bit more. And I think, well, I need to try and stop it going straight if I want to push on. Because you're in the AMG GTR, which is a load faster, and you're a bit in front, and you're starting to pedal on a bit more in the Merc. So I'm going a little bit faster, pushing your car a bit faster, trying to be respectful as well, thinking I don't want to drive it flat out.
You're going to bounce off the red
car.
Line.
No. I wouldn't do that to anyone's car. I'd only do that to my, I do it to my cars, but I wouldn't do it to anyone else's. I'm always respectful with people's cars. So I then start holding the brake to stop the understeer as I'm going into corners, which worked.
Trail braking.
Yeah. I know how to do that. Quite good at that.
Well done.
Well done. So I stopped the understeer. But then as I stopped the understeer, and in a modern car, people that know modern cars, you can, dare I say it, take the piss a little bit more with them. So you don't have to completely straighten the wheel and get the car straight before you can start to get on the power, because the understeer is not quite as bad. Then I noticed that I can get the brakes in, and what I'll do is I'll do what I do on a modern car, and as soon as I can see the corner, I'll get on the power. So I done that and it went straight again. And I thought, hold on a minute, you can't do this either. I mean, I am genuinely going to be upside down in a minute, so I can't do it like this. So once I'd figured out how to drive it, and how, and you drive it fairly well, mate. I know you've had it 4 years, but you know, you were pushing on, and it's a tricky car to drive fast, you know, and I wasn't really pushing on like you did, rightly so, because it's not my car. But I can just tell it'd be a tricky car. And the first thing I said when I got out of that car, mate, you need some new brakes, because it will absolutely transform that car. But like you said to me, I always refer to them as piles of shit. but that's my analogy of them, because I can't do what I want to do in a modern car. But you phrased it quite well. It's not a pile of shit. It's just old, and that is basically it. Really, I had a good time in it. The time that I was in it, I wouldn't want to take it on a trip or drive it for a long period of time. I had a nice drive in it for 20 minutes or whatever. I had a good experience. It's just not for me. It's not for the way I want to drive. It doesn't do what I want a car to do.
Okay, so firstly, thank you for I think being honest.
Well, I was honest.
And not trying to wind me up. I'll pick up on a few things you said. So firstly, you said you turn out the junction, put your foot down, nothing happened. I wish I had these clips, but you said on the radio, throttle response is very good.
But it's a Ferrari.
Yes. So you didn't put your foot down and nothing happened.
But
you put your foot down and it wasn't as fast as an AMG GTR.
Correct.
Which is made 15 years later and has, how much horsepower does GTR have?
580.
Thank you. So nearly 200 horsepower more and loads of torque. Yeah. So that was the thing. So nothing didn't happen. It just didn't happen as quickly as you were maybe expecting.
But that's because I just jumped out of a car that was probably twice as fast.
Yes, exactly. So, just wanted to clarify.
No.
Just clarifying,
so,
you know.
So nothing happened in terms of what I just 15 minutes.
When you
put your foot down in the AMG, it sods off. You know what I mean?
Of course. When you
put down in your car, it doesn't sod off.
But it goes.
It's quick.
And we both agreed that actually, if you were in a GT4, we would have been very evenly matched.
I should have brang a GT4 because I think in terms of power, I think there would be really not a lot in. And actually, I think straight line speed, your car is probably a little bit faster than a GT4. But like I said to you, where I'd catch up would be brakes and tires.
Yes.
Which I think is a huge problem in your car.
So to come onto the understeer, so famously, the 3.6 has a very light front end. And actually there are lots of forums and lots of people out there talking about putting literal sandbags in the front bonnet to keep the front end down. And also reports of, you know, super high speed, 150, 160 miles an hour. You know, that front end really is picking up and basically having no contact on those front wheels and big crashes happening. So yes, what tends to happen is if you try and carry too much speed into the corner and turn with a lot of speed still, then yes, the front end will wash wide. So you'll just start pushing wide into the opposite lane. Not good. So you've got to scrub the speed off before you get into the corner. Trail braking is one tactic, or just big on the brakes, lose the speed, then turn in. If you get on the power too early, leaving the corner or midway through the corner, again, it will push that front end really far wide. So again, you can understeer well out of the corner. And I actually find power out understeer far worse than turn in understeer.
Yeah.
The turn in understeer is pretty easy to get on top of.
But you can stop it.
You have to be unbelievably patient at the apex
to
counteract the sort of power out understeer. But as you mentioned, you figure out how to drive the car. So for me, I lay apex every corner. You know, I go in deep and then I lay apex and then just power out as quickly as I can. You get a bit of movement around the back sometimes. But anyway, it's about figuring it out. You're right. Yeah. It's a complex car. It's an older car and it's not going to perform as a newer car would. I like that because it's a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just get in the car and anyone can go fast. You've got to think about it. You've got to learn the car. You've got to figure it out. You've got to drive and you've got to drive it. And then I think you actually summed it up perfectly because we were discussing ever since that experience at Cool Classic Club. And then of course you're driving the 360. Where would a classic or a modern classic fit into your life? And fundamentally it wouldn't, because I like spirited driving, right? Mm-hmm. I like to go at 7/10. You know, I like to make a bit of noise. I like to go fast. I like to push on, but I'm not looking to attack the road. I'm not looking to keep up necessarily with other, even if we were in a big convoy, I'm happy doing my own thing. I actually enjoy that car the most when I'm by myself.
Yeah.
And I can just drive it within my desires, the car's capabilities, and just have a nice time.
Yeah.
So when it was you and I, you're in a very modern, powerful super sports car, and then me in a 20-year-old car, I'm pushing that car a lot harder than I usually would, and I can.
Yeah.
But you, every time you get in a car, you want to be at 10/10, getting the maximum out of the car, getting the maximum from the road, keeping up with all your mates, no matter what they're in, and just living your best life, and then going to comfort mode and driving home.
Yeah.
So you actually had the ultimate 360 experience in the sense where you drove for 20 minutes, it was lovely, the weather was perfect, the roads were beautiful, you had a lovely time, and you got out and you walked away.
Yeah.
You don't need that in your life because your cars that you tend to have do that, and the drive home, and the drive to the track, and blah, 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 and all at 10 tenths.
Yeah.
My 360 does it as well, but you don't want to have to put up with the manual and the creak and the roll and the this. You want to always be in a car that's basically perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want something that does everything perfectly. It's as simple as that.
So maybe with age, maybe with age, in 20 years' time, when you get a GT2 RS, because it's a car that just did everything, and your kids are going to go, you old man.
Yeah,
you old man.
Yeah.
Or the next, whoever the future podcast generation will be like, oh, could you imagine having a 2 hours? What a load of crap. What an old piece of poo. It's got an engine in it. Ugh,
but I don't think, you know, there has been such a big jump between your car and a modern car now. I really don't think that cars dynamically and drivability wise, there's not going to be that big jump again. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's always easier to say that when you're in this, because you wouldn't have thought it when somebody delivered the 360, took delivery of a 360 in 2002, they had no clue of the advancements that were coming. That was the latest and greatest from Ferrari.
Yeah, but race cars, like they still had different suspension. And nowadays, that's where it's all come from, you know. It's all come from GT race cars.
Hybrid technology, synthetic fuels.
All sorts.
Chem instead of carbon fiber. No, I'm talking about what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So the advancements, I think, are still going to be as good. I disagree with you there.
Yeah, but brakes and tyres and stuff like that, like back then, 360s, you probably could option ceramics. Could you option?
Nope.
Right, okay.
They came in for the Stradale.
Right,
so,
okay.
So there's not much you can do. So to touch on the brakes quickly, there's not much you can do with the brakes for that car. Brembo do an aftermarket kit. It's about $4,000. Mm. And there's a couple of other companies, but then it's like $7,000 or $8,000.
Yeah.
And also if you put the ceramics from the Stradale, you've then got to get the bigger wheels and it starts to really mess up with the computers. So you haven't got a lot of options. I've got those incredible pads, which as I say, have added a lot of feel, but there's not much that can be done. But you say this, what about 296 GTB with its ABS Evo, whatever it's called? That's a huge advancement in road car brake tech.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, maybe as well, going back to your car, maybe if you started modding it and making bigger brakes and making better tyres, maybe you wouldn't like it, mate.
It wouldn't be the same. It's like 360 Trev. 360 Trev has been building the ultimate 360 for years. He's put every single part from every single kind of iteration, and his car is incredible to drive, but in my mind, it's not a moderner anymore.
Mm.
I love that my car transports me to an experience from 2002.
Yeah.
You know, when I was falling in love with road cars, with Formula One, with Michael Schumacher, with Ferrari, that was the car. And so I'm driving that era, that period. That's what I enjoy. So if you perfect it too much, it goes away from being what it actually is.
Correct. Yeah, about. Yeah, I get that, yeah.
But fundamentally, you enjoyed the experience.
I enjoyed the experience. Yes, I did. For that period of time.
Yes.
If you...
There doesn't have to be anything else. You can say it, but you could just leave it there.
No. I feel I need to elaborate. If you said to me again, now, and again, we was on another road trip, mate, do you want to swap cars again? I would not be that bothered. I'd say, yeah, okay. But I wouldn't be like as excited as I was when I first got in. It's sort of like, yeah, I've driven it. I know what it drives like. It's a good one. For what it is, it's just not me, mate. It's not what I look for in a car.
So, am I any closer in being able to convince you to do a modern classic road trip?
In what?
You get to pick, but in it cannot be older than
2009. So a Scud comes in.
No, wasn't Scud 20...
20 in 2009.
Was it? Not 2010, 2009?
9 and 10.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to say 2007 then. No, you can have a Scud. I mean, I'll let you have a Scud.
But even then, like, I've driven a Scud.
Yeah.
And that isn't too far off of your car. It is a bit better.
Yeah, it's quite considerably better.
I think, but what I mean is it's still got bad understeer.
Yep, bad understeer.
The brakes, even though the ceramics, they're not that good, not like a modern Ferrari.
No, of course not, because it's from 2009.
That's what I'm saying.
Your comparisons are all out the place.
Yeah, but I would say it's a Scud is more closer to your car than it is to a Pista.
But that's the whole point of doing a modern classic road trip.
I mean, the other thing as well, again, didn't have any problems with your car, which were brilliant, mate. Well done. But that's another thing that gives me the EBGVs. And actually, even the AMG GTR, although it was absolutely fine, it's out of warranty now. And I'm thinking, what if an engine management light comes on? Or what? Because it's not normally like, everything I drive is normally in warranty.
Sure.
Because
you've got to think about it.
I haven't got to think about it. And if it breaks down, I just call whoever up, Mercedes, Ferrari, Lamborghini, McLaren, whoever I'm in, and they just come and get it and they give me another car. So
to answer my question, you're not quite ready for that modern classic trip yet.
No, mate, because I just get the flap on that it'll break. I know your car was as good as gold and you drove it properly, you done loads of miles but they just break, mate.
But you could have a great experience. I mean, you in a Scud or a 997 GT3 or a 0.1 RS or, you know, there are plenty of things out there. I mean, heck, you could take an Enzo. I mean, there's plenty of things out there and you could have a great trip, a great time and drive hard and enjoy yourself and not break down and love the car. You could.
If as well, like, if we regularly done trips like I do with my pal.
Your actual friends?
No, but my other friends that I go away with regularly twice a year. If we done more stuff modern classic, then I'd buy one because then you've got a modern classic car, so it because we wouldn't be going as fast, so it doesn't matter, but we are still going fast for them cars. So may I'd consider it, but like, other than doing something like that with you, I wouldn't use it, mate.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I just want a trip. I just want a trip just to see. Because, you know, it was cool that you bought the AMG GTR, but I would have preferred it if you'd bought a CLK 63 Black.
What, that? I'd have one of them.
You'd be in a wall, but.
Would I?
If you drove that hard, you would be in a wall.
Would I really?
Oh, my God. You would actually hate that road trip, but, you know, I would.
I would love one of them cars, though. I really would love like a seal. And that's
you have about 3 months and you get rid of it.
Would I?
Yeah. Anyway, it was an amazing trip. And as I say, really some great videos to come. I haven't even mentioned driving the Novatec 812 GTS. Oh my God. We also linked up with Shmi and checked out his SF90. So stay tuned to the main channel. So I never like to usually do this because I just feel like you're like, oh, well, we know everything now, so we're not going to watch the videos. Please do still go and check out the videos.
There's a lot of things we didn't talk about.
There are a lot of things we didn't talk about. That's fair. Actually, yeah, what we did in the Netherlands that morning before we left. Wow. Actually, there's a lot we didn't talk about, so fair play.
My drive in the Porsche, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, no. Okay, fine. Yeah, so like, plenty for people to still tune into the channel. One thing I do want to elaborate on, though, which I did already mention in the first video that went live, was the very cool shout-out I got from Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I mean, this was absolutely nuts. Loads of you sent this to me on Instagram and emails and Twitters and blah, blah, blah. He was appearing on Spike's Car Radio. By the way, one of my favorite automotive car podcasts. I have to be honest, I wasn't massively aware of it until about a month ago. So the fact that then I'm getting a huge shout out from Mr. Seinfeld was fairly outrageous.
Let's get him on here.
Well, we can try.
We'll go to America. It's a trip.
Sure, I mean, I don't know if he's that big a fan. I'll give it. He didn't know my name. He knew I'm seeing through glass. He's like, I don't know the guy's name. I was like, Sam. It's Sam, Jerry.
Hello.
I mean, I'm going to try and go and find him. I'm looking at a potential US trip end of July. So, Jerry, I'm coming for you. But yeah, Spike's Car Radio, not to try and send you all off to another podcast. It's great. They do some really cool chat. And I like the angle and perspective they're coming from. But it's pretty honored to be mentioned by someone like that. Because of his Porsche links. Okay, fine. He's an incredible writer and comedian and icon within US TV. But also an incredible Porsche collector.
Yeah.
So from the Porsche side of it, because as we mentioned, kind of both of us... got the buzz going. And actually, we didn't really elaborate on it too much for you, but yeah, of course, 964 Carrera RS and then spending some time at the Nürburgring.
That's what
we did. Just tipped you over, so.
Does me every single time I go to the Nürburgring. It wasn't even that 964 drive. It was when I got to the Nürburgring and it's just Porsche, Porsche, Porsche. Then you hear them batting around the Nordschleifer, making that noise.
We're both just like, yes, please.
Yeah, yeah.
We could buy one together. What one would... could we buy a slightly older one together? Like not a slightly old. I'm talking like, what would be an affordable? A 991.1 3RS? Is that of any interest to you? It's not much of interest to me, if I'm honest. What about a 911R? Would you have a 911R? Would you have a 911R?
Yeah, would you?
How much are they these days?
350.
Okay, we're out. What about a 987 Cayman? That might be more up our street. Anyway, yeah, an amazing trip. I hope you guys have enjoyed this, like, behind the scenes. So we're tired today. We're tired, but I think we got through it.
We got through.
I've enjoyed remembering our epic few days in Europe. And it's really just the start for me because, at least with regards to the main channel, I'm hitting the road again very soon. I've got a few sort of weeks of commercial activities here in the UK, hence why I smashed that Easter road trip now back. But don't worry, we will be here week on week, bringing you some car news and some updates and some topics, noting down a few things that we want to discuss in the future. So if you're watching here on YouTube, subscribe now, turn on notifications. If you're listening, please keep listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you might listen to your podcasts. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. And I'm at Seen Through Glass. By the way, Jerry, my name's Sam, on most social media platforms. And we'll be back with you for another episode next week. Bye-bye.
See y'all.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.